Britain.
Harriet Harman, Lady in Red. Gordon Brown's deputy is the early favourite to replace him.
Privilege is no bar to the commanding heights of the Labour Party. Neither are women always squashed under its industrial machismo. There's even a place for lifelong Londoners and a movement whose heartlands are northern and Celtic. So much is obvious from a glance at the Cabinet with its expensively schooled Chancellor, female Home Secretary and Primrose Hill's own Miliband brothers. But no modern Labour figure embodies all three forms of otherness like Harriet Harman, the deputy leader whom many suspect of manoeuvring to replace Gordon Brown after the general election he seems doomed to lose next year. Recent weeks have seen this feminist of vaguely aristocratic provenance not only a native of the capital, but an MP for one of its constituencies, side with the left of the party on such wedge issues as bankers' pay and the planned part privatisation of the post office. Bookmakers have her the favourite to take over for Mr Brown, and having beaten five others to the deputy leadership in 2007, she is a proven winner. She is also a survivor. Almost half of her 58 years have been spent in Parliament. She has weathered myriad setbacks, including her controversial decision to send her son to a selective school and her sacking in 1998 as Secretary of State for Social Security after a row with a junior minister there. And unlike other veterans such as Jack Straw and Alistair Darling, she projects a hint of freshness. Her 3 years out of government, followed by four in the quiet role of Solicitor General where she relived her early career as a lawyer, proved as invigorating as it was frustrating. Even Miss Harman may be daunted, though, by the obstacles that lie between her and the Labour crown. Younger colleagues such as James Purnell, Ed Balls, and one or both of Ed and David Miliband can claim to be better long-term bets. The Labour left, in which the party may seek comfort after years of centrist compromise, is roamed by the creative John Cruddas and the increasingly active Peter Hain, both outside the Cabinet. Miss Harman is no great thinker, say many, and lacks political judgment. Such carping is unfair. She has not survived for so long through obstinacy alone, but she recently encouraged it with a bizarre and unenforceable promise to deny a failed banker his hefty pension. Miss Harman also personifies a rather narrow sect of Labour thought. Unkindly nicknamed Hattie Ha Person for her political correctness, she has often championed a cultural rather than economic leftism associated with the bolshier London boroughs of the 1980s. The equality bill she is shepherding through Parliament with its new rights for women and minorities is a kind of manifesto for Harmanism. Critics of her preoccupation with sexism often make her point for her with their ugly tone. Treachery and high heels was one columnist's verdict. They also underestimate the role her harsh and lonely introduction to Parliament, where heavily pregnant, she joined just nine other Labour women in 1982, played in shaping her views. But cultural politics of this sort does not animate many of her party's bedrock members, for whom Labour is just what its name implies, a movement for the economic betterment of working people. Miss Harman got little support from the unions in the deputy leadership race, despite being married to an important trade unionist. And that was before the recession made the culture war seem kitsch. Yet Miss Harman cannot express her thoughts on economic matters without provoking charges of sharp-elbowed self-promotion. A YouGov Compass poll of Labour members conducted in February showed her job performance rated below that of Alistair Darling and David Miliband, despite their mixed records as Chancellor and Foreign Secretary respectively, and worse than that of the embattled Mr Brown. It may be a perception of disloyalty that is denting her popularity in this most tribal of parties. The unforced errors that have given rise to this image can be ironed out. But the apparent disadvantages Miss Harman can do nothing about, her gender, privilege and metropolitanism, may come to be seen as electoral assets in a party that, lest it forget, won power by adding middle-class women and southerners to its core vote.